Amazon 5-Star Theater presents Real Customer Reviews, performed by Ed Helms. Tonight's review, Tactical Jacket. I was living a simple life. Didn't get out much. Then, I bought this jacket, and everything changed. Women came flocking to me from lands domestic and foreign. On the 245-day sailboat voyage home, I was attacked by a shark. I knew it was the jacket he was after. Giving up the jacket in exchange for my life. 5 stars. Amazon customer 69. Shop the perfect gift this holiday on Amazon.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and 4-piece McNuggets. It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
Hello, everyone. This is JVL here with my best friend, Sarah Longwell, publisher of The Bulwark. Here I am looking, repping my new Bulwark merch. Do you like it?
Yeah, I do like it. I was wearing the sweatshirt the other day. We have the new merch is great.
It's pretty nice. It's pretty nice. My wife does not like this hat.
Why?
She says that the style of this hat is a style that works on the youths.
The youths. Yeah.
But that does not. She's like, I'm sorry. But when I put the dad hat version on, I just look, I'm not Tim. I embrace my age, but I don't embrace dad hats.
Yeah.
That's where I draw the line.
Sure. Well, there's a lot of good new hats, but I approve of your flat brim there.
I got an email from a guy I'm very friendly with, frequent correspondent, who said to me, it's like, hey, JVL, you're looking great, but you're on camera all the time. And have you thought about some of the hair stuff that they put out? Because it's really good. Like, it really works. Like, you can, like, regrow a lot of hair.
Get your hair back?
Yeah, get your hair back.
No way.
And I said, buddy, this is a little weird. This is a me thing. Maybe it's like a Catholic thing. But the hair loss is something that I just sort of embrace as the kind of mortification preparing us for death. Like,
this tracks.
I am getting older. This is age coming for all of us. And I don't know why the hair thing I'm just like totally okay with, but the hair thing I'm basically totally okay with. I'm just like, look, I'm not gonna, this is who I am.
It's true. Although you are not without your, you care.
No, I care a little bit. And so like I've done like the GLP ones, but that was as much about health as anything else. Like I couldn't lose the weight and it was bad for me and I feel better. Like I just feel nothing hurts. My back doesn't hurt. My knees don't hurt. Like it's easier to go to the gym. Like it's that's more that than vanity. The hair thing would feel like vanity. And believe me, I am plenty vain. Just not about physical stuff. I'm vain about all the other stuff.
Sure.
All right. Normally that's the back half of the show. We don't do that up front. Okay. So we are going to start with some, we're taping this Wednesday morning. Mm-hmm. You are hearing it probably on Friday morning. If some earth-shattering news happened between Wednesday morning and Thursday, Sarah and I are deeply concerned by it. And we are not ignoring it because we are heartless / incurious.
Yeah.
We just don't know what it is.
That's right.
Okay. So we get word that the prosecutors in Georgia have dropped the racketeering case about the Find Me 11,000 votes.
Well, Trump has not had a good run in the courts, so I guess he was due a break. I think he's due a break. I just think...
Right. Law of averages.
Law of averages. And also, you know, he's going to figure out a way. All of the cases that were brought against him in the interregnum between his two presidential terms, they're all going to be gone. I don't think that for anybody who has hope that these things await him, no. That's not going to happen. There may very well be new things. When he leaves, even with all of the protections the Supreme Court have given him, this is a guy who's doing a lot of crimes. and is using our federal government to do them. And so don't lose hope on the idea that Trump will never be prosecuted for anything.
Official acts.
Officially, he will try to claim official acts for everything. But, you know, I just, that is for down the road. These things, as wrong as it is, once he was elected president a second time, they were all going to find a way to get these out of there.
Are you at all concerned about the moral hazard this creates? Because if a sitting president can call up election officials in a state and tell them to find me the 11,000 votes to overturn an election result and do so with utter impunity, why wouldn't they do that again?
Yeah. The moral hazard question, though, so George and I just taped like right before this for a show that's coming out Monday, so this will now preempt this, but we did a mailbag episode where people emailed answers and or questions. And one of the questions was, like, what is the worst of Trump's many crimes that he has committed in the 10 months since he retook office? And, you know, George was kind of like, I don't want to rank them because there's so many and they all are above the threshold of like extremely dangerous and very bad. But I was like, you know what? I've got a top one. And my top one is the pardoning of the January 6th prisoners. And the reason prisoners, the people who committed the crime of trying to overturn an election.
Convicts.
Rightfully convicted criminals.
The felons.
But Trump's pardon power has been out of control and is meant to say... Mm-hmm. Like the reason I think it's the worst is not because of the individual act of pardoning them, but of the future signal of saying, if you commit crimes on my behalf, I will take care of you.
Yeah.
And so all of these things exist to me in the same universe of moral hazard. And it is one we are trapped in which there are a lot of people who are saying, well, I can do these things because Trump will get me out of it. Before he goes. Like, there's a lot of people counting on that. And we know Trump has said this stuff out loud, like, do this thing, I'll take care of you. And so he runs it like a mob boss. And this is one of the things we were talking about. And I think you and I should at some point do an episode really devoted to like a reformer's mindset. What we think a democratic reformer should do when they get in there, but like the reform of the pardon power, and people won't want to do this. Like the next president won't want to do this, but we have got to reform the pardon power. It is an outrageous mechanism for corruption that we are seeing.
Well, but let me tell you why they won't want to do it. Even if the next president is Pericles, like we elect the next person to be elected is the most high-minded, broad-spirited person. They don't care at all about limiting the reason they will never attack the pardon power is because that will be a giant fight requiring enormous investments of political capital, and for what? Right.
Well,
nobody is going to invest political capital in something for which there's no payoff.
Well, this is where you're probably right about this. I do think there's got to be a reform package that is much more tailored and narrow and neutral than the one that they did with HR1 when Biden came in that never went anywhere because it was just too many things. But I think focusing on limiting, and people should be slightly in the mood for this, of reining in corrupting executive powers, reestablishing some of the laws that some of the powers that lie with Congress, like some of that I think has to be done, and they can be. And the best way to do them is for them to be party neutral at a moment when everybody's like, OK, that was pretty out of control.
Yeah, but they won't be, right? Because the Republicans will take the other side of it and everything will polarize. Right.
Maybe
everything will be polarized. Does George think that you can reform the pardon stuff without a constitutional amendment? Because that's the other thing, right? Like things that can be done by legislation are different than things that can be done by amendment. And my position, maybe I'm wrong, is that in our polarized moment, amending the Constitution is impossible.
Yes.
In the same way that removing from office an impeached president is impossible.
Yeah.
This is a mechanism which no longer functions. It is rusted shut and ossified, and we should just stop pretending that it is an option because it's not.
Yeah, the Constitution. So he does, not on this particular thing, but we did have a long conversation sort of adjacent to what we were talking about around what can be done. Actually, you know what we were talking about? We were talking about Supreme Court reform in this case. And he was like, you can't do term limits because it's a lifetime appointment. That
all the best constitutional amendment. Right. Yeah. All the best and smartest reforms we can't do.
Yeah. I mean,
so we're stuck with the second tier of reforms that are not as optimal, but are possible because you can do them legislatively.
Yeah. I mean, you and I would maybe quibble over which ones we think are, you know, definitely good reforms, but what you can do, like, so his point about the courts was you can do something where the justices, basically every president gets to appoint a new justice, and then you have like a rotating bench of kind of seniors. And it was like an interesting idea. I'm not positive how well it works in practice, but it reminds me that there are many sort of incremental reforms that can be made that ameliorate, or if not outright ameliorate, certainly do make better, which actually I think is the actual definition of ameliorate, but they make better, if not completely better, some of the problems we are currently facing with the sclerotic institutions that we're dealing with. And so, you know, anyway, we're off topic, but I don't know what the exact answer is, but it could be.
We'll do a show on that.
Yeah.
But whatever. I mean, but my basic thesis is that no Democrat would want to spend political capital on those things. They'll think they should spend political capital on kitchen table issues. And they'll think that that is the way to be popular. Like the people elected me to help make healthcare coverage better and more affordable, not to fuck around with the Constitution and worry about some process argument for pardons that only pointy-headed people like Sarah and JVL care about.
I don't know about this. I understand your point, and I think it's fair. I just, you'd be surprised what mood people might be in when we get to the end of this thing with Trump.
Be in a guillotine mood about the oligarchs.
Yeah.
Right? French Revolution.
I think there is some of that for sure. I mean, it sort of depends on how things go. Anyway, we're so off topic. Sorry,
back to Georgia. Here's the parallel I want to make. In Georgia, we've basically just thrown in the towel. Prosecutors have been like, yep, nothing we can do. Can't do him. Meanwhile, in Brazil, Jair Bolsonaro reports to prison to begin his 27-year term because the legal system in Brazil is more robust and better at holding people who attempt coups to accountability than the American system. So we're worse than a South American republic.
The Bolsonaro story is a very interesting one. I'm not an expert, but I know enough to be dangerous. In part through, I was doing some research on one Jason Miller.
I know him.
And yeah, Jason Miller, not Stephen Miller, one of the other Millers in the and this is the guy who was Trump's spokesperson, really kind of a foul dude. But not only did he help Donald Trump when Trump was trying to do his own coup, but he also advised Bolsonaro. And one of the big differences, and he, because Getter, remember Getter?
Oh, I remember Getter.
His social media thing.
Yep, poor
that
Getter.
It was mostly, what was the kind? It was
Sonic the Hedgehog porn.
Yep. Yeah, right. So that's that. It became an enormous social media channel in Brazil at the time to promote the idea that the election had been stolen. And that there was foul play against Bolsonaro. You can see the playbook. So what happens? It's different quite than America, but it ended up with a bunch of Bolsonaro's biggest supporters storming different institutions in Brazil. And so not such dissimilar situations, but Bolsonaro is going to jail and Donald Trump is president again. And that reality should hit people like a ton of bricks.
Yeah. Does it not? I get the sense that there's no, like, maybe people, honestly, listening to people in your focus groups, I would guess that the percentage of people who know about Bolsonaro and what he did and that he's going to jail is like one in 30.
Yeah. I mean, I was
maybe one in 50.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't know. Like, if we could make people know, would they care? I don't think so.
No. This is not a, this is just, this is a, that's in a different country, JBL.
Yeah. No, I guess that's right. How could we possibly ask people to care about things happening in a different country?
I mean, I could make, the brain, my brain that has listened to so many Trump voters could tell you exactly what they would say, which is to say, well, yeah, those South American countries, that's why we're better because we don't put our former presidents in jail. They do that in these other countries. Like, see, we were behaving like that when we went after Trump. I could do, that brain, I know how that gets there, no problem, if they were to learn about it, which they won't.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow. But back to the Georgia case, and this is my serious question to you. What is the incentive of a sitting president who loses an election to not attempt coups going forward? Because, look, the lesson is it probably doesn't work, but if it doesn't work, you're okay. Nothing bad is going to happen to you. And if it does work, you get to keep being president. It's a free shot.
Yeah, I mean, I think that this is something you have been always right about in the sense that there's no election police. Like if Congress is compliant, listen, we have a system of checks and balances. And the reason that we would push back on this in normal times is we would be like, well, nobody else is going to let him get away with that. That's just like not what we do here. But we've learned a lot since then, and we've seen that there is an entirely compliant Congress. Although, again, what mood they're in 3 years is difficult to know. Because as we talked about on TNL, I do think that Trump is starting to be oatmeal brained. And I think that there is a strong push by ambitious Republicans to say, this guy's going to be 83. He cannot run this party forever. I want to be the heir apparent. And that fight's going to, but I don't know. I don't know for sure. I don't, yeah. You know, that could happen. Or they could all be like, you know, by that point, he's throwing people in torture prisons here in the United States. And actually, there have been some killings. I mean, like, you know, you can imagine the horrible scenario.
Let me ask a different moral hazard question of you. So we began talking about this on TNL yesterday, about the prospect of impeachment. Another impeachment.
Yeah.
And here is my moral hazard question to you. I agree that if we are talking about nothing but pure political calculus, Democrats should not impeach Trump again. Right? I think that's what you said. And I think that was the argument I made. Absolutely correct.
Yeah.
The problem is this. They didn't want to impeach him the first time. I don't know if you remember this, but
yeah,
Democrats did not want to impeach him.
Nancy Pelosi felt like
they had to because of what he did. Like he did this crime in which he was withholding federally appropriated funds from a U.S. ally while attempting to blackmail that person into meddling in an American election. And the Democrats had no it. Like they knew, why are we going to do this? This is not going to help us politically. But on the other hand, they were caught in the moral hazard of, but shit, if we don't do something, then this is allowed, right? You have to make a demonstration that this is a thing that's not allowed. And so one of my concerns is like, what if Trump does something new after January, like, you know, Democrats control the House again, and he does something that is so fucking illegal that the choice is, well, you can do the politically dangerous thing, which is try to hold him accountable, even though you know you're not going to remove him, or you do nothing, at which point the next time some president tries something like this, their defense is, well, but he did it and it was no big deal. Right? Like these things are precedent setting always. And I have a lot of sympathy for Democrats who, again, I think they did the right thing in impeaching him, because if they didn't, then that becomes standard operating procedure, right? Like, presidents are simply allowed to do that.
Yeah. I mean, this is so, but the calculation, and I think they it's not just, it's sort of like the shutdown. Democrats are going to have to start asking themselves, to what end? And they're going to have a strategy, mm-hmm. a real strategy. And that means, and I guess going back to the first time, I remember I was pro impeachment, I think, going into it, because it was wrong. And but here's the thing that I thought at the time that turned out to not be true, and that I bet Democrats thought at the time, is you're still at that point, it's 2018, 19, and you think, well, Republicans must be against this, right? And so, like, it's not a crazy thing to think back then that actually you convince over the course of this some Republicans who are foreign policy people, like Lindsey Graham, is like, well, if it was quid pro quo, I'd vote for it. And they proved, yeah, I do.
Right, it was literally Chris Christie, I think, who said, you know, like, unless he said the words quid pro quo, and then there's like tape where he's like, it's quid pro quo.
It's quid pro quo. And I'm not, I maybe it was Chris Christie. I know Lindsey Graham, yeah, like, staked out the quid pro quo, and they all caved. Yeah. And so now Democrats know that. They know they don't get Republicans in an impeachment unless, right, we're in a different space where Republicans are like, oh my God, we've got to do this and we'll vote with you. I think that's extremely unlikely. Yeah. But like, you'd have to know that. And instead, if it's not that, what I would do as a Democrat is say, every day he's, because also when you're like, well, he's, if he does something so bad, I'm like, what do you mean? Like murder people on the high seas?
I know, like, I don't even, yes, exactly.
Prosecute his political enemies, deport people to foreign gulags where they're tortured, who are actually Americans or who did nothing wrong. Like, you know, they're going to have their hands full if they try to impeach on everything. But more importantly, they should be saying, these are impeachable offenses, but there is a Republican Party who has decided not to hold their leaders to account. And like, they're going to have to sort of decide on a different strategy, I think, that, God help them, is a little more communications heavy than, you just have to live in the reality of what we know now. Yeah. So much of politics right now for me is like, learn the lessons of what has happened, and don't make things worse. But, you know, it's like the redistricting is a perfect example. Like, Democrats generally, they want to end gerrymandering. Mm-hmm. I would like to end gerrymandering. I think gerrymandering is a curse on our democracy. You're not going to end gerrymandering. And so if Trump does mid-cycle redistricting in Texas, you better do mid-cycle redistricting in California. And so I think that is the point, is like, people have to learn the lessons of where we are.
I think the Democrats have been very, very smart in how they've handled the redistricting thing. Because they've made it clear that it's tit for tat retaliation.
Yep.
Right. They've made, and so it's not like, well, we're just going to keep, it's like, no, we're doing this because you forced us to do this. We think this is bad. We're not, but you know, this is, it's very smart. Okay. We have some other stuff to talk about. We're going to do it on the other side.
Come hang with us.
A little more ballroom discourse. There's some ballroom stuff happening.
Okay.
You guys are going to love it.
Am I?
Come join Bulwark Plus.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets.
It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
Truth is, Ohio, when it comes to broccoli salad, you got the secret ingredient on lock. Miracle Whip. You know it. Your neighbors know it. Heck, everyone from Toledo to Portsmouth knows it. That tangy zip of Miracle Whip is the reason why Ohio's broccoli salad runs circles around everybody else's and never gets winded. So here's to you for keeping it bold, keeping it zippy, and keeping Miracle Whip right where it belongs in all your favorite recipes. Buy Miracle Whip at your local grocery store and get your tang on, Ohio.
This time of year, most of us are checking off our holiday gift lists. But identity thieves have lists too, and your personal information might be on them. Protect your identity with LifeLock. LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second and alerts you to threats you could miss. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Make this season about joy, not identity theft, with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.